Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that covers hot topics, current events, and answers your questions to help you grow from milk to meat into wise, skilled, world-changing followers of Jesus Christ. Here's Dr. Chad Graham, Pastor Al Desjardins, and your host, Steve Bastian.
Al, Andre, this coffee shop is amazing.
Yeah, I love it here, man. It's so cool. Equator Coffee Roasters in Almont. We're sitting here. We invited. Well, I figured since we're here, we may as well go somewhere highfalutin. You know what I'm saying? I'm sitting with doctors and lawyers and Steve. I mean, so we have to go somewhere special. And so we're sitting here, and you can smell the coffee roasting in the background. You can hear it grinding in the big machine. There are wonderful amounts of opportunity here for being blessed through the joy of coffee. And I figured that as long as we're here, we may as well find out what's going on with Andre and see if he can explain some stuff. Because I know I got you guys together because I needed you guys to see each other. I know Chad's got a lot in common now officially with Andre as they're pursuing this legal stuff. Perhaps they can get some homework tips on how to what he has to do, what he doesn't have to do, what he has to read, what he doesn't have to read, and how to cheat as legally as possible.
We need Chad for a few hours a week, so yeah, any help you can help him so that he can have that, that'd be great.
Just trim off a little bit, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, and Andre, you know I have a connection with a mutual friend with Al Sebring.
Oh, yeah, Al Sebring. He's the man. Has a wonderful radio voice. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And for people who don't know who I'm talking about, Al Sebring does the intro and exit for our podcast on the Final Version, so... he has a great voice, and I love talking to him. I'm really disappointed he's not in the choir this year in the community. So,
you know, he might. Can he sing too?
He can sing.
Oh, that's cool. Really, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get my fat-free, foam-free decaf latte here, and sit down and enjoy this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chad would like a glass of water. I believe he just ordered a glass of warm water.
Yeah. Well. Can I read off a little bit here about Andre so that, you know, we can learn a little bit more about Andre? His official title is a Director of Law and Policy and General Legal Counsel for ARPA Canada. He works right out of ARPA's Ottawa office. He researches and writes on public policy, conducts regular analysis of the impact of different government bills and court judgments, and also acts as ARPA's Chief Parliamentary Lobbyist. He represents ARPA in various court interventions, and having made arguments before the Supreme Court of Canada 3 times and 3 provincial courts of appeal. Andre is a lawyer, and his degree is from the University of Ottawa. He's a husband, a father, and attends a Christian Reformed Church in Ottawa. He's been published by 2 reviewed law journals, the National Journal of Constitutional Law, and the Supreme Court Law Review. The one was due with legalizing assisted suicide, and the other was to rethinking the freedom of expression in the Charter.
You know, I only knew like 60% of that. You're an incredibly intelligent person. You know, that's really cool. That's cool. And I realized only 3/4 of the words in that actual description did I really understand. So I'm really looking forward to you explaining what Steve just said later.
Yeah, I just had to read it. You know, cut page off websites.
It was on the website, man. Yeah. See, Steve and I don't have that problem. It's not being worth much means your bio is really short.
Yeah. We're really glad to have you, Andre, but there's something we have to do. Every guest on the show has to be run through the meat grinder to see if you
prove themselves worthy.
The meat grinder.
The meat grinder.
The meat grinder.
Welcome to the meat grinder. This is a biblical knowledge and personality integrity examination to see if you're worthy to speak in authority to the Carnivore Theology audience. You'll be asked a series of questions of your personal beliefs, things that Carnivore Theology finds important, and a dissection of your theology. The rules are, answer honestly and quickly, indecisiveness will be seen as weakness, and you will be judged.
Dun dun dun.
Oh dear.
Are you ready?
My heart's pounding.
That's the way it should be.
He's presented before the Supreme Court 3 times, Steve. I don't think he's intimidated by you.
He's taken the bar, and he's been through the Supreme Court. Now he's sweating. That's the deal.
By a special education administrator. Okay. Number one, Luther, Calvin, or L. Ron Hubbard?
Calvin.
Hey. Your preference, beard or no beard?
I'm looking at a beard, two, three beard, beard, beard.
Oh,
technically, including you, it's 3.5.
Right, yes. And Calvin is 4.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bonus points, yeah.
Communion, wine or Welch's?
Oh, wine for sure. Ports, if possible.
Oh, hey.
This is an important one. Number 4, will there be bacon in heaven?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Al will say there will only be bacon in heaven.
Number 5. Pick one book other than the Bible if you could only pick one.
Pilgrim's Progress.
Hmm.
Hey.
Yeah, that's one of Chad's recent rediscovered favorites.
That's my all-time favorite. That's mine too.
Okay.
So I'm the computer isn't even necessary at this point. Okay, just keep moving. Keep going.
Flames, Oilers, Jets, Senators, Canucks, Leafs, or Canadians?
Leafs?
There's indecisiveness. Okay.
I will put the computer back.
That's more pity, though, than incorrect, so.
Okay, yeah. Number 7. Your favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, that's easy. Maple walnut.
Oh,
nice. That's
very good.
It has to have maple if you're from Ottawa. It's not even an option. It's really weird. If you do a DNA test in the Ottawa or Quebec area, you have to be really careful because some of it actually is maple syrup. All it's built into the DNA. You have to eliminate that from the test.
Number 8, at communion again, leaven, unleavened, or gluten-free?
Leaven.
Number 9, Al's favorite, Batman or Iron Man?
Oh, Iron Man.
Really? Well,
okay.
Right.
And number 10. This question's just for you, Andre. No one else has been asked this. If Canadian law was a color, what color would it be and why?
Brown. Definitely brown. Because it's a total mess.
Oh man, that's my new ringtone right there.
Okay,
brown.
Al.
Definitely brown. That's awesome. Okay,
let us run
this through the meat grinder computer and see how it comes out. My goodness, he passed. It's interesting because we got some wavelength issues in the middle here as there was some indecisiveness, but at the same time, because of his absolute love for bacon, he seems to have pushed it over the edge. So we can continue with the podcast.
Well, that's good. Well, we do thank you, especially with you being in pain, not feeling well, for being part of the podcast.
Pleasure.
I'd love to know a little bit more about ARPA and why does it exist in Canada? What's the vision and goal of ARPA, and how does it serve Christians, everyday people in Canada? If you can frame that for us, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, give us our intro here, yeah.
Okay, so the Coles Notes is that ARPA has a two-fold mission. The first half of the mission is to educate, equip, and encourage particularly Reformed Christians, but any Christians, to political action. So that means giving them the tools, giving them the encouragement, giving them the education they need to be politically engaged. And then the second part of our mission is to bring a biblical perspective to our government. So that includes both the legislature, those who make the laws, and the courts, those who interpret the laws. So that's it in a nutshell. How we do that? Well, we've been around for about a decade now as a national organization. We've grown from one half-time employee to now having 9 full-time employees scattered across the country. Main office right here in Ottawa. This is the one I manage, the Ottawa office. And, we We do it through, it's very grassroots oriented. So we want to give people on the ground, Christians in the pew, everyday, regular types of Christians who don't have the luxury that I do of being able to sit down and read through court judgments or read through bills or read through thick tomes of theological inquiry to figure out what would be a good, biblical Christian response to the various types of political issues that are rising day to day in this country.
That's awesome. Well,
and you do it through a lot of different ways, right? I mean, because you got the email that you send out. You guys go out and do conferences. You go all over Canada and speak. You'll stand before. You'll actually go to the politicians. You'll go sit across from them in desks. You'll tell them what some issue. You know, interesting. I was talking to you before about that, and you were saying how difficult it is because now you're in a different realm. Back when it was conservative government, it's a lot different now because it's a liberal government. But you'll walk in there and sit across from the ministers, and you'll be able to have a conversation with them and say, okay, here's some issues. Maybe you don't know about this stuff. You know, 1,000 people out here, you know, 10,000 people, 100,000 people that are part of our organization or part of the Christian realm, that this is important to them. You know, you're not, you know, and you're the voice. You're one of the voices out doing that. Plus, you're defending. You know, you're actually standing up and championing from a Christian perspective, Reformed Christian conservative perspective, some incredibly important issues. Plus, spending all that time telling us, you know, dum-dums who don't know all this stuff, how to respond to this, where it's found in the Bible. You guys have an awesome podcast,
yes,
by the way, which is really excellent. I mean, all you guys who like the briefing out there, go sign up for the Lighthouse News because it's like a Canadian version of the briefing, which with all Canadian perspective and different interviews, and Andre's out there all the time.
Mm-hmm. Maybe too often.
It's really good. ARPA is one of my new favorite things.
Well, thanks for the endorsement. That's great. And it's amazing work. I love my job. I'm, a lot of people, when I'm presenting or touring or whatever, they ask me, so do you do this full time? Yeah, I get to do this full time. And I love doing it. And I get to do it. I get to even be paid to do it. It's the type of work that I would do on a volunteer basis if I had to. But hey, I get to get paid, so
I'll really eliminate good. That part from the notes just in case somebody's listening. Oh, really? Well,
we are the board of directors. Check.
I do have a question though. Now, and the reason that you are full time, the reason this is such a big deal, you said you have 9 employees now across Canada. It's because there's so much going on. A lot of it that people don't know about, and a lot of people that just throwing their hands up in the air. Can you give us the helicopter view of the brown that you see in the color here? Like what are the things that are happening in Canada right now? I don't know if you do top 10 or whatever, that Christians really need to be concerned about. There's some stuff, like if you watch CBC, you watch CTV, you watch Global, you don't hear them. You don't hear them at all, but there are some incredibly important things happening. So can you give us not just the reason that ARPA exists, but, you know, what's going on out there?
Yeah. Well, a lot of good things, a lot of bad things, a lot of things that the Christian voice needs to be heard on, right? We're called as Christians to be prophetic voices to the culture. And that means, not like an Old Testament vision of a person in flowing robes standing on a street corner just preaching. I mean, a prophetic voice to our culture means an effective one that is engaging at all levels of culture, at the leadership level, at the water cooler level, at the neighborhood over the picket fence kind of level, all of these types of levels. And so the issues I think that are facing us today, some of the very important ones would be, I was once asked this question at a youth conference that I was presenting to. They asked me the question, what do you think is the one single issue that is most pressing for Christians to speak to today? And I said, well, there's actually two, depending on which level of government we're talking about. So if we're talking about the federal government, the national government, I'd say the single greatest issue facing Canada today, the greatest human rights tragedy and travesty of justice that we're facing today in Canada, is the absolute total lack of any legal protections whatsoever for our preborn human neighbors. In Canada, most people don't know this, in Canada, there is zero protections at all for preborn humans. We stand alone as a country as being the only country in the world that has no legal protections whatsoever.
If I can put a little interjection in there, we had Mike on the show with us last spring, I think. So Mike Shudin with We Need a Law. And so we should reference that in our podcast link and all that. So
yeah, and then I said for the provincial level, I think and I strongly believe that our public education system is the single greatest threat to liberty, to Christian freedom, to Christian worldview in our country right now. Some people say, Andre, you're way overreacting. But I've been watching the public education system. The reality is that right here in Ontario, anywhere from 91 to 95% of all students are taught through a state-run system. So it's either the public system or the Catholic school system. Our kids are taught from kindergarten or even preschool all the way to university and then beyond into university. They're taught by the state and they're taught a particular worldview, and it's a worldview that's hostile to Christianity. It's not neutral on the question of Christianity. It's hostile to Christianity. And unless we can change that, and change that conversation and change that model, and engage in that system, that education system, I think we actually have some pretty big challenges ahead of us. But those aren't the only two issues. I think that there's a bunch of other issues that are going on right now, some that which are very encouraging. The issue of porn, I think, is a big one. Christians in particular are more and more speaking openly about it, not only as a challenge for people in our churches, not only a challenge for young men in our churches, teenage boys and so on, but actually as something that we can speak to as a matter of public justice and public health to the broader culture. And I think we're actually seeing some really great movement on that issue in particular in the House of Commons. So that's kind of cool.
That's really interesting to me, not to sidetrack your statement, but the culture is catching up a little bit because, you know, for a while there, I don't know, 30, 40 years, let's say, there was sort of that argument, you know, whether it be 60s, the free sex, or going all the way to, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, and counselors saying, well, actually, married people should use porn, and it's healthy to use porn, and it's okay to make your own porn, and all the rest, and you're like, and making it sort of a good thing. Now, they've seen the fruit of what they've been selling people, and it's destroying. Mm-hmm. Destroying families and kids and futures, and boys are just wrecked, you know? And so even the secular society is going, you know what? Maybe we were wrong. And now it's pretty neat to see the government going, let's at least look into this. We should, you know, they're commissioning studies, you know?
Yeah. And we're very happy to see Motion 47, which looks like it's getting all party support in the House of Commons. Motion 47 is calling on the House of Commons Standing Committee on Health to study the public health effects of pornography, which is really, really good. And to go beyond what you're saying, Al, I'd say it's more than just wrecking our teenage boys and wrecking our marriages and so on, although it's definitely doing that. So I don't want to downplay that. But in addition to that, what we're seeing is that it's wrecking the people in the porn shoots themselves. Like, what's happening is that they say this about marijuana. It's not, today's marijuana is not your grandma's marijuana. Well, the same is true about porn. Today's porn is not the porn of 1960s. It's violent. It's very misogynistic. It involves violence against women in almost 90% of the free porn sites in Canada and North America today feature violence against women. That could be verbal abuse, actual hitting, rape, etc. So it's very, very violent, and the people in them are often subject to things like exploitation and so on. So there's just really, really bad things going on there, and we're not talking about it enough. But we are, I think, starting to talk about it, which is a good,
good
first step. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we got abortion, and we got the schools, and we've got obviously porn. Can you give us one more kind of big deal that's going on up there?
I'd say in Ontario, Bill 28 just passed yesterday. Bill 28 completely redefines, reshapes the family, and it does so with a total focus on parents being able to craft and shape.
Hold on one sec. I have a friend who doesn't know what Bill 28 is, and I was just curious if you could just tell me what that is.
Yes. No, absolutely. So Bill 28, Ontario law, just passed. It's called the All Families Are Equal Act. The name is misleading, though, because it's very Orwellian. The All Families Are Equal Act it just passed. So it now does reshape and redefine families. So it now says that families can be up to 4, possibly even 5 parents. You can be parents before the child is even created. You can create children within these preconception arrangements, contracts between any 4 people. Doesn't matter if you're same sex or not same sex. It could be 4 men, 4 women, 3 women, 1 man, whatever. Doesn't matter. You sign up. You make this contract, you say, all 4 of us are going to be parents. Let's create this child by intention, by design, create a child that will not have and will not necessarily know their biological mother, biological father. And that passed unanimously. 79 voted in favor of it, 0 voted against it. No real debate about it. That to me is really bad. There's serious concerns with that bill. And yet just floated through. So I think, again, in Ontario, some people are just starting to figure out what's going on there, but it's already passed. It was rammed through pretty quick. So, yeah.
Well, if we just jump forward from there, take it to a specific issue that I know that you've had some background with. We've been in my background, because I've been involved with the Free Church for a number of years, and I've been on the National Ministry Committee for a while. We've been hearing a lot of updates about what's happening with Trinity Western, which is our denomination's school. And they've gone through a number of challenges. First, when they tried to introduce a teaching program, the BC Teachers Federation said they wouldn't certify Trinity graduates. That ultimately went to the Supreme Court, which ruled that Trinity had a right as a Christian school to train teachers and that they should be certified if they met all other qualifications. Over the last decade, teachers who graduated from Trinity have been involved in all areas of education through BC and other provinces, have won awards, and there haven't really been any complaints or negative repercussions because they came from Trinity. But now it looks like history is repeating itself, and the school has looked at opening a law school, and the law societies are saying, well, we're not going to certify those guys. And given the background for our listeners' sake, it's now gone through a number of courts in British Columbia, Ontario, and was it Nova Scotia?
That's right, Nova Scotia, yeah.
Yeah, Atlantic province. Anyway, the Nova Scotian ruling seemed to be quite strongly in favor of Trinity. BC ultimately has appeared to have gone in very strongly in Trinity's favor, and Ontario has been fairly negative, and it looks like it may go back to the Supreme Court now, if I summarize that correctly.
Yeah.
What I'm really interesting about on that, because of your input into there, people hear about it and they think, well, you know, this is one random school in BC, who cares? What do these things mean for Christians in general, Christian liberties in general, as we see courts are saying, because you're a Christian, you can't participate in education, or because you're a Christian, you can't participate in law, essentially.
Mm-hmm. It's setting a very troubling precedent that majorities of lawyers in the two of the most populous provinces in the country, BC and Ontario, would be on side with trying to shut down or bar from practicing law evangelical Christians or just Christians in general. Not necessarily if you were a quiet Christian. They're okay with quiet Christians. But if you're going to be the type of Christian that would be willing to go to a Christian university, be bold about your faith and align yourself with a community that holds itself to a statement of faith like Trinity Western does, it's when you do that public act, that's what they have an objection to, right? And so, to me, that's a very troubling thing that we have so many lawyers, and it's the lawyers who become judges, it's judges and lawyers who shape and craft law. It's that these, and a majority of these, would be this hostile and openly so to Christians. That's a troubling trend. That being said, the decisions of both Nova Scotia and in BC were excellent decisions, really good. The BC Court of Appeal one was exceptionally well written, and so that gives me hope. The case is almost for sure going to go to the Supreme Court of Canada because we have 2 provincial courts of appeal that are disagreeing. The Ontario Court of Appeal saying it was totally reasonable for the Law Society of Ontario to say no to Trinity Western, and the BC Court of Appeal saying it was totally unreasonable for a law society to say that. So we have 2 conflicting high-level courts, and so the Supreme Court will probably is almost guaranteed to have to resolve that. What does it mean for Christians generally? I'd say 2 things. One is that it has implications on what it means to be a Christian professional in this country. So it goes beyond just lawyers. It'd be lawyers, doctors, nurses, teachers, anyone who's certified by the state. The argument that's being advanced and is being repeated multiple times in the media is that if you are a Christian, but you need certification from the state for your profession, well, then you got to put your Christianity to the side. If you hold deeply to these religious views or these religious values or virtues that conflict with the mainstream narrative right there right now, well, then the state better not certify you. They better not give you a certification for your profession, because if they do, well, the state is now discriminating because they might possibly be aligning with your views, which is baloney. Like, that never, that's, the logic is terrible. So that's the first problem. It's a marginalization of Christians within the professions, not just law. The second problem is that it's a view of religion is being pushed that is very, very, very individualistic. So it conflicts with what Christianity and actually most religions are. Most religions, and definitely Christianity, is a community religion. It's a religion of a community of faith. We would call them the community of faith, or the communion of saints. The Apostles' Creed talks about the communion of saints. And that's what this is about. The Law Society is saying, hey, you can be a Christian and become a lawyer. Just go to a secular school by yourself as an individual, and preferably just keep your mouth shut about your faith. But don't you dare associate with other people of like faith, of like mind, who share similar values, who share similar virtues, understandings of doctrine and of theology. Because once you do that, once you associate with more than one people, well, then you're a threat, or you're discriminatory, or you're a bigot, or whatever. And it's that total misunderstanding of what it means to be community, and that religious freedom should also include not just my personal individual religious convictions. It should protect that for sure, but it also has to protect my right to share that with each of you three and everyone else that calls himself a Christian and says, yeah, this community covenant or this statement of faith, I align with that. And we're going to hold each other to account according to that statement of faith, according to that authority that's higher than any of us. And that's what I think many lawyers, secular lawyers, are objecting to.
It kind of boggles my mind, you know, as I go through the list in my head of things that Christians aren't going to be allowed to do or may not be allowed to do, because, you know, like when it comes to actually you can't be a teacher if you're going to be a Christian. You know, you look at our buddy JT there, the prime minister, you know, saying you can't be in my cabinet unless you have these certain beliefs, or you can't be in my party, sorry, unless you have these certain beliefs, right? There, as far as psychologists or psychiatrists go, sure, you can be one, but don't you dare proselytize. Don't bring any kind of God stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Doctors, I remember hearing an interview online that was saying how it really annoys us when doctors have morals, because when doctors have morals, they don't follow the line of the government or the line of whatever the society is saying they should do. They actually stand up for what they believe, which is actually pretty terrible. They should just do what they're told.
Right.
And it boggles my, you know, there's just so many, the professionals are just falling like dominoes, and I'm depressed. Okay. Can you get me less depressed? Help me out here. Why shouldn't I be so depressed? Or should I?
No, you shouldn't be depressed. You know why? Because you know a man named Jesus Christ who's the King of the universe. And that's why we should never be depressed. And frankly, we shouldn't be depressed because good things are happening, in Canada, and Christians are becoming more engaged, and they're becoming engaged in a way that's deep and meaningful and relational. And I think that's an encouraging thing. I think Christians' engagement in the past hasn't always been ideal. There's been a few different Christian responses to the culture. One is a response of retreat. You know, let's hide out, wait for the storm to pass. Maybe Jesus will come back in the meantime, and then, you know, good to go. Retreat is not a good Christian response. Another Christian response is fortification. Let's just build as many protections and walls for ourselves, fortify ourselves, so that the attacks of the other side, you know, are as minimized as much as possible. So, for example, they might engage in this religious freedom question. Just give us enough protection so they just leave us alone for a little while. And then the third kind of approach is one of domination. We want to go out there and make everyone forced to become just like us. All three of those approaches are not ideal. The best way is to just engage the culture in a meaningful way in order to witness to them and show them the love of Christ. And actually, because of the nature of politics and the nature of the culture wars, a lot of people have a problem seeing love in political engagement. But that's what I'm doing. When I'm engaging in political politics from a Christian perspective, I'm doing it because I'm trying to honor as best I can the greatest commandment to love my neighbor as myself. That's what I'm doing when I'm advocating for good public policy. When I'm trying to fight porn, I'm not trying to impose my morality on everybody else by taking away their pornography because I'm a prude. I'm doing it because I love them. I love their families. I love the girls that are being featured in those films and being brutalized by monsters. Because I love all of them, I'm going to do what Jesus said is a good sexual ethic. I'm going to advance that in public square because I love them. I don't want to see them hurt. Same thing with euthanasia and assisted suicide and preborn human rights and everything else. That's me trying to love my neighbor as myself. And I think that when all other Christians get that, they'll stop doing the retreating into the stained glass closets of our churches and so on. They'll actually get out onto the street. They'll get out at the workplace or start talking to their neighbors over the white picket fence and just start talking about these issues because they're not out of bounds for us. Our King Jesus is King of all of life. He's every square inch of our human existence is his. So that includes politics. When we pull ourselves out of the political realm, when we pull ourselves out of the public square, we're doing Christ a disservice, if I could say it that way. We're denying his lordship over that sphere. And we're not doing ourselves any favors. And we're not loving our neighbor as ourselves. So, I mean, there's three reasons why we need to engage in the public square.
But Andre, if I do that, someone might not like me, or they might disagree with me, or perhaps they may even ostracize me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Best answer ever for poor L. If you need to hug a puppy, L.
Let's engage with that though, and I think many people think that and wrestle with that, and I should take it seriously. So one, we should expect that. Christ said that himself, you know, before they hated you, they hated me. So we should expect that. But that being said, when we talk about free speech, it's a kind of American concept. We have freedom of expression in Canada, which is a softer, perhaps, phrase, freedom of expression. But talk about free speech. A lot of people think that if we have free speech and we got to use free speech, that means we need to make speeches. No, that's not quite right. We should make speeches from time to time. Sermons, I guess you could say, are forms of speeches. But when we're talking about free speech, the best way that Christians can make use of free speech is to follow the example of Jesus by asking questions. Instead of pontificating, instead of preaching, instead of belligerent statements, if Christians just ask more questions, I think we'd be a lot further ahead. And it's actually easier to do. So I say to Christians, I said, we need more courageous Christians engaging in the public square. They say, how do I do that? I have the luxury of, you know, reading all those books behind me and learning and reading to the nuances of new laws and court judgments and everything else. Most other Christians don't have that luxury. That's fine. Just ask questions. Ask questions about preborn human rights. So instead of knowing the perfect apologetic for defending the rights of a preborn child, just get your neighbor to start thinking about the fact that we have absolutely no laws and that preborn children could be born and live outside the womb. And yet for those last 20 weeks of their preborn life, we're still slaughtering them. We're still killing them. We're still taking their life. Isn't that a little crazy? Just ask the question. Isn't that a little crazy? Isn't it a little crazy that in Canada, you can have an abortion because your preborn child is a girl and you don't want a girl. So you can abort the girl in the name of women's rights. Isn't that a little crazy? Transgenderism, really hot topic right now. Very, very politically sensitive. I want to deal with it sensitively. Let's just ask some questions. Maybe we don't know all of the science and the psychology and everything else. Frankly, I don't know it. And I've been studying it for 8 months now. I've read 3 or 4 books on it, tons of journal articles on it. I'm still confused about it. But we should be able to ask questions, isn't it? Are we sure this is the right way that where a 5-year-old or 6-year-old is saying that they're the opposite gender? Are we sure it's a good idea to reinforce that right away at 5 or 6 when we know 80% of the time they hit puberty, they grow out of it. It disappears without any interference. Shouldn't we just let it play its course after puberty and see what happens? Why are we, another question, why are we prescribing hormone blockers and puberty blockers and opposite sex hormone injections into children, teenagers, which have about a 90% sterility rate? So we're taking 14, 15, 16-year-old kids, girls and guys, and we're sterilizing them through these treatments in order to affirm their gender identity. do those teenagers know what the stakes are? Do they know that when they're 25 or 30 years old and they want to have kids, whatever gender they are, they want to have kids, we've just sterilized them? Like, is that right? Is that good? Well, we got to ask those questions, right? We got to start thinking more. And that's the problem, is the other side's not thinking. They're not thinking. So if we ask the questions, they'll start thinking, and then maybe we can open doors that way to start talking about meaningful, deep stuff. Who are we? What does it mean to be made in the image of God? What does it mean to love your neighbor as yourself?
I think that's an excellent approach, and I really appreciate the take that you have on that. And I think that maybe just relates to this. We recently heard Theresa May, Prime Minister in Great Britain, saying that Christians should feel comfortable talking about their faith at work and in other places. They should be proud of it, and that religious freedoms are in the British tradition very heavily protected. We flow in that same tradition, but we've been hearing today in most of these things that you just brought up as the questions you asked, conflicts of rights issues in Canada. And we are, practically speaking, living in a multicultural society with competing moralities and competing rights. So we have the campaign for women's rights, for transgender rights, and for so on. And then we say, but we also have these religious rights. Where do you see, as Christians are being engaged, as we're speaking about here, are we losing in that battle of conflicts? Do we still have strong rights like Theresa May suggested? Should we feel comfortable and confident speaking?
Good question. Thanks.
It is a good question. Just this morning, the Supreme Court of Canada, this very morning, was having a hearing on Aboriginal rights. And for the first time ever, dealing with the question of whether or not an Aboriginal right to protect a hillside or a mountainside, because that is where the grizzly bear spirit exists and lives and flourishes, whether or not that engages religious freedom. So the religious freedom question is still alive, very much so, in the Supreme Court and in our legal jurisprudence. And the courts continue to wrestle with the question. Do I think that there's enough of a robust protection for religious freedom? I think it's there in the letter of the judgments and so on. I think it could be stronger, but there's actually quite a bit there. The courts are really quick to say, you know, religious freedom is not an absolute right. It does have to be balanced against other objectives of the state, that the state needs to be neutral as it relates to religion and so on. But there is, at least now, as the law stands now, there is protection for religious freedom, and we need to exercise it. If we don't exercise it, we will lose it. And we see that particularly in the legal field, where we got lots of lawyers who think that Christians really should be martyrized, that freedom of religion is a second-rate right. I'll give you an example. Talking with lawyers, again, they should know this. This is the law. They should know this. They say, well, on the one hand, you have human rights, and on the other hand, you have religious freedom. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, you're wrong. Religious freedom is a human right. You have human rights, and one of those human rights is religious freedom. And and a lot of people try to pit the two against each other. You have religious freedom.
We even call it a fundamental freedom in our constitutional tradition.
Exactly. Fundamental freedom is fundamental for a free democracy. Freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly and association. And those ones are often the ones that are under attack by state governments and state actors.
It's interesting when you go that way. Sorry, I should probably shut up. But this when you go in that direction, and I've heard that several times myself, I would contend you're actually eliminating the concept of rights at all. Because if the majority view of human rights today trumps any other concept of rights, then you have nothing different than mass hysteria creating whatever it's going to be. You don't have rights. You don't have protections. And the minorities will not be protected, whether they're Christian, Aboriginal, or what have you. I think that's really a dangerous direction to go.
No, absolutely. And again, this is the wonder of the Christian faith and the Christian worldview, is that human rights actually find a consistent and deep moral foundation in the Christian worldview that you don't find in most other worldviews. Paganism, certainly not. Secular humanism, not. Christian worldview founds or bases universal human rights in the image of God, the doctrine of the image of God, that every single human being, regardless of their race, regardless of their sex, regardless of their religion, their age, etc., doesn't matter what their socioeconomic status is, etc., they are all made in the image of God, therefore all equally deserve protection of their life. and protection of certain fundamental freedoms that, that God gives to them and that God calls the state to protect. That's a solid foundation on which we can build. And it's a message that we as Christians got to get out to the culture again, that, that our culture has to understand that, that Christians are not opposed to human rights. It's on Christianity. It's on the Judeo-Christian worldview on which we build human rights. Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Magna Carta, our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, all of these documents find their history or origin in a Judeo-Christian worldview.
Andre, you're the man.
Yeah, sorry.
Get a man, I can listen to you all day. Like between the passion and the knowledge, I mean, I usually have one or other, the other of those, but usually not at the same time. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So if those are all your submissions, Council, Steve's going to close us out.
Very quick question. If someone wants to find out more about ARPA, what you're doing, how to get involved, how to become politically active as a Christian, where do you send them?
Well, easiest first step would be arpacanada.ca. Check that out, browse it out. We just launched a new website this past summer, so I hope it's way more easy to follow and so on. Definitely check out our easy mail tool, easy.arpacanada.ca. You can easily customize letters to your MP or your MLA. Very, very simple. I'd say start there. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah, I've used your easy mail program. My MP knows me by name now, so I don't think he's too happy with me, but that's okay. So. Anyways, thank you so much, Andre. It's such a pleasure to have you on. We've been, you know, trying to organize this for a while. We're so excited.
Super awesome.
I recommend that we, as Christians, we pray for Andre and ARPA and what they're doing for us. They're on the front lines when it comes to the political side of the Christian battle here in Canada. And we need to be supporting them and praying for them.
They may be wearing nice suits, but to the government, they look like John the Baptist.
That's right.
To find out more about Carnivore Theology, get some custom merchandise, download bulletin inserts and posters, or send us some ideas about topics you'd like us to cover, visit our website at www.carnivoretheology.com. For even more Carnivore Theology content, check out our new CT Shorts video series on our YouTube channel. If you like what we're doing, please share us with your church and friends. Like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. And as always, we encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
So, are you ready?
Are you ready?
Well, I think so. You haven't even asked how I'm doing yet, but
don't care.
Okay, I didn't think so. All right,
meat grinder. No. Listen, you don't talk. You don't talk till you go through the meat grinder. Are you clear?
I'm ready.
My finger is on the button. All right. So at this point, a sound effect will start on the podcast. It sounds something like this. Ping.
Like the Batcave computer.
And we can ask the question.
How are you,
Andre? How you doing?
Actually, horrible. I've got this wicked toothache right now, and I'm in world of pain. Yeah, but I had to be on this podcast, so
I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm popping tons of Tylenol 3s and ibuprofens, and even some antibiotics. It's great. Wow. I'm all hopped up.
Wow.
Yeah, theology works better under pressure and under pain. So.
Wow. Okay.
Why that's suffering? I'm sure that's coming up.
Have you tried rubbing some bacon on it?
No, not yet. I will do that as soon as it's over.
Okay. It's possible.